Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Well, we are not failing anything. You've heard about the failing New York Times. This is not. This is the Media Project, the thriving, blustery, potent Media Project. Welcome. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. That is Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, down there. That I say down there because I'm sitting in one end of the studio and he's at the other. And here in the middle is Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman of Kingston, New York.
Hello, Rex.
Hello, Ira. It's so great to have you here. And we are going to give our listeners an opportunity to have a little insight into the media issues of the week. You know, actually, over the past week, one of the big things that's emerged has been more claims of sexual harassment against Bill O'Reilly, the most popular figure on cable television.
Yes.
How do you feel about him, Alan?
I don't like him. Or put in another way, him I do not like.
Him I do not like.
You know, I saw a tweet from, I don't want to put the name because I might get it wrong, but of someone who is or still does work at or has retired from the Poughkeepsie Journal. And Bill O'Reilly went to college at Marist College in Poughkeepsie. And according to the tweeter, he was an intern at the Poughkeepsie Journal. And the writer said, and I'm going to try to clean this up for radio. Boy, David Justina may have to blank it out. He was an a-hole then. That was their remembrances of him from the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've taught a lot of kids in college and graduate school. And Rex, this will be an interesting question for you. I find that the most abrasive of the people who are on my Legislative Gazette project, which is now an online project, but the Legislative Gazette project or others, are some of the people who I really had trouble dealing with. In other words, they were not nice.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there were lots of nice kids, but the ones who weren't nice tended to do extremely well. And gotten nicer over the years, by the way.
You know, don't you think it's true that, especially if you're looking for an investigator, this is not always true. I mean, I think our investigations editor, Brendan Lyons, is a very kind fellow, but he is steely. But a lot of investigative reporters are difficult.
Well, they're dogged, and many of them have an edge to them. I can recall two or three people who did investigative pieces for us on a regular basis. Those were the two or three about whom I got the most complaints from people in the community. Well, that guy's a jerk. Why is he out there? He never gets anything right. But it was just that there's that quality to the personality.
But most CEOs are jerks, too. Oh, with all due respect, Alan, I, of course, exempt.
And to you, and back at you, Rex. Ira.
But let's talk about O'Reilly. As we're sitting here, he's still employed, despite what seems to be a growing Cosbyism surrounding him. I mean, why is Fox being so steadfast in support of this guy? Or is he, in fact, getting a raw deal?
Well, let me call you up a little bit short there. Cosby is accused of being a rapist.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's just accused of being a rampant, disgraceful sexist who demands sex from people in order to promote their careers and everything else. There's a little bit of a difference.
Well, but I think the question has to do with this, because Fox has paid out $13 million in secret settlements, and so he's expensive to the company, and now the advertisers are backing away. Mercedes-Benz, Hyundai, BMW, Mitsubishi, Lexus, Bayer, GlaxoSmithKline, you know, it goes on and on, Allstate.
Right.
All these advertisers, 20-some advertisers, have gone away from his program, and so the question is, are they going to have to start discounting that time in order to sell the advertising.
Well, it's said that the advertisers, most if not all of them, are remaining with Fox. They're just going on other programs. So
right.
we'll see if they've actually lost any revenue as a result. But, from all accounts, the atmosphere in that building on 6th Avenue is unlike any other media or environment in terms of the harassment and what women employees and people of color have to put up with there. And what has become particularly troubling about the O'Reilly case, particularly in light of the recent New York Times story, which really has resurrected and built up this reputation.
That was quite a piece.
Quite a story. Was that in light of all of this, that Fox already obviously knew about the payoffs, they nonetheless just recently signed him to a contract extension.
Yes, but they signed him to the contract before the Times piece.
They did, but they knew what the Times reported later. In other words, they obviously knew that the millions of dollars had been paid out, and they knew what was going on in that culture, yet they felt that they should continue to keep him.
Well, what is it about having a repulsive piece of slime on your television station that excites so many people that they want to watch him? That's the interesting question, because after all, that's the business we're all in.
He has a personality that some people like. He's authoritative. That is, his delivery is authoritative. He comes across as somebody who's aggressive. People like it. And let's face it, this is a country that elected Donald Trump, who, by the way, said, I think he's a person I know well. He's a good person. I don't think Bill did anything wrong.
And that's because when Trump was in trouble for his famous, genital grabbing comment, which has led to half the country wearing pink hats, O'Reilly, I presume, was with him. And I'm assuming that payback is just the way you do it.
But that also answers your first question, was why do the people continue to watch O'Reilly despite the reputation that he's built? And these are many of the same people who were willing to overlook the Access Hollywood tape and vote for Trump.
Excellent point.
And why is that?
Excellent point. I'll tell you, it's interesting because we know from Roger Ailes, he would sit the women in the chairs and he would call in the plays, have them pull up their skirts a bit.
More than a bit in some cases.
Yeah, right. And so there is a sexist attitude to begin with, at the place. And by the way, I hate to say this to you, but if you look at CNN more and more and MSNBC, there's a certain emulation going on with women who are there.
Much less so than MSNBC.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, but I would ask this question. It's less a media question, but to the endorsement that Trump gave. What is this man thinking about? He is the president of the United States who has this in his own background, and yet he feels the need to answer a question about O'Reilly by supporting him.
I just told you why. Because it's payback.
Well, but meanwhile, the guy is the president of the United States, and he's basically telling the country, there may have been sexual harassment here, but Bill's a good person, so we're going to look the other way.
Ira, first of all, he didn't say there may have been sexual harassment here. He just said he's a good person. I don't think he did anything wrong.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have settled the cases that he settled.
Well, yeah.
And I think he believes that it's not such a big deal.
Right.
And that sexual harassment.
For him, it isn't. And I want to point out that he got a majority of white women to vote for him in the election. So apparently what we always assumed was poison that would kill somebody, and might, by the way, have killed a Democrat, any Democrat, who said the same things, he gets away with it.
And this raises a media issue, and I'm going to ask the question and give a little answer.
I have a question for you, too.
And that is, does the media make too big a deal out of this? And I think the answer to that is, we may make a bigger deal out of it than an awful lot of Americans think it deserves. Good for us. It may be that this is one of those instances where reporting is leading the culture rather than reflecting the culture, and that is in an intolerance for sexual harassment and this kind of behavior.
It's so interesting that men, reporters, editors, and others are not held to the same sexist standards, obviously, that women are. In other words, we don't tell the men who are on television, you got to open your tie more or do this.
Oh, I see.
You see what I mean?
We're not expected to make them look, it would be that
so
would make
I was going to ask you a question. I noticed, and I wondered if anybody had called in this play for you, I noticed that you're wearing a sort of a pinkish shirt today.
It is a pinkish shirt. It is pink.
And it's got enough starch in it to walk away, as always. As always. So what does it cost to launder a shirt? Now, we do ours in the washing machine. You know?
But your question is a fair one. We've talked about it before. Why is a Chuck Scarborough, who's been on NBC New York for literally 40 years, still there in the main anchor position, whereas his female partners have changed very frequently over the years, except for Sue Simmons, who was there forever until all of a sudden she got old and wasn't there anymore. So you're right. Why does TV feel they can have the oldest distinguished-looking male as opposed to the older distinguished-looking female?
I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
Because people tune in the television to see the short skirts. It's that simple.
What people?
The viewers. That make
the what viewers? You think my wife is doing that? You think that's why
she watch Fox?
No, but
okay. Then the point has been played. Some is the smarty pants.
Well, but go back to Fox, and we're sort of going circular here. The Fox crowd is believed to be mostly less educated and less affluent than who watch the other programs, men and women. Yet the sexual harassment issue with O'Reilly, there are certainly many, if not more, blue-collar women out in this country who watch Fox who have experienced sexual harassment in their lives than as many as anybody else. Yet why do they stick with this?
Because they're saying, oh, boys.
Boys.
That's the way that boys are. We can't hold them responsible for it. I happen to have another theory on the whole thing. My theory is that Trump's election has everything to do with race, and that particularly in the South, where the tradition always was that black guys can't look at white women. You go back to Emmett Till. It's been a disgraceful, horrible part of Southern culture for all that long. And I think to some degree, you know, a lot of white women in this country like Trump and voted for him and thought that he fit into that paradigm, as we academics like to say.
Paradigm. Here's an interesting issue. Pew researchers have found that 83% of Americans believe that the president's relationship with the media is generally unhealthy. Okay. I think we can probably
accept that.
Generally an unhealthy relationship. But here's interesting. 73% say that the feud is getting in the way of Americans' access to important political news. And I think that most of us would probably agree with that as well, that it is getting in the way of other news that we really ought to be paying attention to. But what can you do about it? How can you avoid the kinds of issues that are raised by the president's assault on the media, which is in itself important? When he is attacking the media as enemies of the people, when he's trying to undermine the credibility of the vehicle that gives people access to information about their government, that is important political news.
Well, you're absolutely right, Rex. Every time he lobs one of those firebombs in the morning, a tweet or something like that, everybody stands up and salutes because they know it's going to prove interesting to their readers. Some very good newspapers, I think, including yours, Rex, on a regular basis, has downloaded those stories to an inside of the paper. But most don't. The tabloids certainly don't. They can't get enough of it. The New York Times regularly gives it a huge amount of space. So does the Washington Post, because it's so incendiary and so unhealthy that he's doing all of that.
It becomes, whether he intends it as a smokescreen or not, it becomes something that actually eats up all the oxygen in the room so that there isn't attention to some of the big issues that are going on.
So says Sapogo, we have met the enemy and he is us. And the reason I say that is, you know, I run a radio station which has people all over the place. And what do? They go to city hall meetings and to Board of Education meetings, and people say, you know, that's boring news, but it's really where people live. And it's so important that we do it. And so important we say, this is what the city is up to here, or Saratoga, or Springfield is up to, that do you give them what they need, or do you give them what they want?
Well, I think the influence, again, of the 24-hour cable outlets disproportionately describes the importance that journalists place on these stories. In other words, when Trump throws something against the wall that he knows is going to distract the public and the press from more important stories, because he doesn't want them to report on the more important stories, he knows that there's going to be reported on all three of those channels, and they're going to be reported all day on those channels, and they're going to displace virtually everything else that's going on in the world. On the other hand, the newspapers, both print and website, will probably be reporting on the same story, but we'll have some context to it. And the story that takes up 12 hours on CNN and its various panels might be on page 14 of the New York Times tomorrow, which was meaning the story should be reported, but it's not the dominant, it's not the most important story. So I think the cable is what's disproportionately influencing.
Okay, so let me put it this way to you guys. Steve Bannon, who I consider to be one of the more despicable people.
President Bannon.
Is dismissed from the National Security Council from their top-level group. It becomes a huge story on cable stations. It also, Ira, I hate to disagree with you about anything, as you know,
yes.
It also becomes top fodder for the major newspapers because it's symbolic of the fact that the right wing, which had taken control of the Trump administration, may be losing ground. It's important.
Well, but I would say, yes, Steve Bannon is a legitimate and important story because of his apparent influence in
but
the White House.
But did Trump do it on purpose to distract
people? No, I think that's real news. I think that the better example is the Susan Rice story, where they have ginned up again one of their favorite punching bags dating back to Benghazi, and they are disproportionately harping on what was going on with her and this alleged unmasking of sources. And that has been dominating the cable in a manner that I don't think should be dominating.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, when I compare that with Bannon and the Bannon story, Bannon is explosive. The Susan Rice story, you know, the former, for those who are listening who don't remember her, the former national security person in the Obama administration, it really was a sort of ho-hummer, we're covering it, we don't really want to be covering it, but we're covering it. I didn't get the feeling that you're talking about two things of the same import.
It's, again, because you don't listen to Fox News. It's huge.
It's
and I have to tell you, it's a difficult situation that somebody in a job like mine confronts because you get readers writing to you saying, how come you're covering up the Rice story? This is an important story, and you're not covering it because you're supporting Obama still. And I'm thinking, well, Obama's out of office. But anyway, you're attacking the president, but you're not doing this stuff. And it becomes, so you second guess yourself. You think, wait a minute, is this legitimate? We don't put much wired news into the Times Union anymore. We're primarily a local paper. But on Inside Pages, we give people a smattering of the news. But on the day that the Rice story really broke, we had only room in the Times Union for about 12 inches, 14 inches of wire news from around the world. It was a small paper that day. People may not realize that newspaper size is dictated by how many ads there are because you have a proportion of editorial to ads. And so we had a small news hole. So here was a choice. We had the terrible gas attack in Syria, which was huge news.
Yes.
And we had the Rice story. And we actually had to diminish our coverage of the big news of Syria in order to get in a little thing about Rice, which I question myself. I wonder, was that defensive editing on my part? Did I do that because I just didn't want to get more phone calls from angry Fox News viewers?
You know, Rex, you just said something which may be a little bit diversionary for me, and I apologize in advance for it. But if you think about it, what you said is that based on the amount of advertising on a particular day, the news was meted out based on how many pages there were. And you guys both know this all too well. You, Ira, as a publisher and an editor, and you, Rex. That doesn't seem right. We don't do that here on public radio. In other words, we have a, you know, a hole to fill, and because every day it's the same.
Every day is 24 hours, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't you see?
But if you had, I don't know if there are rules you have to follow, but if you had 10 times the number of underwriters that you currently have, would you put a lid on how many you would sell to?
No, we would definitely charge them more money.
Charge them more.
Well, but if you
the same number.
If you had on your roundtable program in the morning, if you had 10 underwriters instead of 5 underwriters and you used all 10, wouldn't those 5 take up time from the rest of the program?
I tried to answer you. You know, there are days, Ira, when you're on this show, I don't even.
Well, I don't pay any attention to what you say.
You're listening to what I to
no,
what I said.
No, you didn't explain it.
I did. I said you'd charge them more.
Oh,
and you'd end up with the same number of underwriters,
well,
don't you see?
That's very interesting. I'm not sure that's what I would do because you'd want to have more, you know, advertising copy is reader information. People, I learned very sadly once that people buy the newspaper sometimes just for the advertising.
They do indeed, yes. And actually, that's why our biggest selling papers are Thursday
Sunday.
And Sunday.
Right,
Sunday,
yeah.
You've got the all the ads and the inserts, same thing Thursday in this market is where you also get those.
And my friend who works here comes in and says, you don't mind, do you? Because you don't use these. and destroys my newspaper, my Times Union, searching for all of the good.
Right, they're looking
coupons.
For leads. Oh, the coupons. But yeah. You know, there are many occasions during the course of a year when the editor will go to the publisher or the general manager and say, you know, we really need more pages tomorrow.
Yeah, we're going to take an extra page or two.
That can happen when it's really
that
necessary.
Happens pretty often. Yeah. If you have a big project, you'll do it.
Yeah, election day, certainly.
I want to commend you on that.
Yeah, well, yes, but it doesn't work on a... the problem is that the paper's put together generally, and the press actually has to be configured in advance, and so it takes time to do that. And so when you end up in the evening starting to put the paper together and you realize, huh, there's a lot of news here. It's just a slightly bigger news day than usual, but I don't have any extra space. You really get squeezed.
We all have problems, Rex, and I'm so sorry.
It's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith. That's the professor, the publisher, and the editor. We thank you for joining us. If you want to offer your comments, send them to us, media@wamc.org.
He'll only mock you for them.
The program, isn't over yet.
We're trying to explain these things to Alan, and he just gets mocked.
Well, that's so demeaning. We are trying to explain these things.
Yes. One of our listeners, actually, last week, John, wrote in and offered some help regarding the etymology of the phrase bite me because, you know, I was...
Is that etymology or entomology?
No.
Because if it's entomology...
We're not eating any insects around here, we hope. Though people, you know, we really could. Well, and I think that future generations of Americans will.
That would bug me.
Anyway, it's typically a U.S. idiomatic expression of discontent or annoyance with another party, sometimes a statement of contempt or defiance, according to that. So some would say that there was initially a sexual connotation from it. So there you go.
For the uninitiated, why are we talking about this? Because it came up last week.
I think Rosemary used it in reference
to someone. Yes, she did. And I love it when Rex hypes our ratings by says there was a sexual connotation to it.
Oh, dear, what can you do? So one more thing that actually has come up is talk about libel, because, again, the president has talked about libel law to crack down on news organizations that publish information that he doesn't like. And this is another, you may call this another smokescreen, because the fact of the matter is libel law is basically set by the states. Libel law is also set by Supreme Court over the years, the Supreme Court. So unless he's going to make this a litmus test for who he appoints to the Supreme Court and makes the interview for the next Neil Gorsuch. So what are you going to do? There's a half century of settled libel law that would have to be overturned case by case.
New York Times versus Sullivan, right? In which you have to prove actual malice, right?
Or reckless disregard for the truth if you're talking about public officials. You know, the standard is lower if you're not a public official.
Right, which I always think is in violation of the 14th Amendment and everybody being considered to be the same thing. I mean, you know, people have lied about me. I wanted to sue them, but I can't because I've injected myself as a public figure.
Well, you have made yourself a public figure. That's
right.
It. You have put yourself out there. So you can't claim the benefits of being a public figure, such as they are, and then not take some of the detriment as well. That's, I think, the theory, that you made yourself into a public figure, and therefore you are making yourself controversial, and people have a right to offer their comments about you.
Well, but
what do you think about him? What do you think about him?
No, I was going to ask the question. Susan Rice, her name has already come up. The president of the United States says, I think she has committed a crime. Can she sue him for libel?
No. She's a public figure, clearly. You know, we have a story about a former New York State legislator now in the private sector. A story by our great state editor, Casey Seiler, who is accused of sexual offenses in his new home.
Not Casey, the legislator.
No, yes. I'm sorry. That's a misplaced deposit. Wow. The former legislator. And the question is he still a public figure?
A former legislator.
Served four terms in the legislature. He is not anymore. And I think the answer to that is he's what in New York state law we consider a limited purpose public figure.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so does it run out? A little bit lower.
It runs out.
But that's not it's not definitive. It would end up being a jury decision if it comes to that.
Think about what Trump can do and has already done. Here's a guy who is not measured in his tones, who tweets at randomly and irresponsibly, in my opinion. He could be what we would call libeling people left and right and would be protected because he's the president. Other presidents have chosen their words a lot more carefully than this guy has.
I think that's safe to say. Okay, well, and so we'll close on a safe statement then. How about that? Mm. All right.
I think I'm going to wear a short skirt next week.
I have to be gone. I'm really sorry.
Oh, you'll be missing something. I'm going to tell Alan to bite me.
See you next week on the Media Project.
Yeah.
Never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worried.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, professor emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Ira Fussfeld is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.